today on Doomed.
We've got an exclusive investigation for you tonight. Donald Trump is a racist, they say.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Christina Lopez, Deputy Director for Extremism at Media Matters, joins us today on this episode of Doomed with Matt Binder. That's right, you know, me. You should know it's Doomed with Matt Binder by now, everybody. I mean, who else would it be with? But anyway, Christina's on the show today to talk about, you know, I feel like I was just telling her before we went live here, you know, the news cycle moves so fast now. This was such a big deal last week, and no one's talking about it today. But listen, this is actually a great case study, as Christina was telling me. And I agree, obviously, because that's why I'm telling this to you. To basically see how these sort of right-wing conspiracies and tropes sort of make their way straight up to the president. And I just pulled us live on the screen here. Christina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
And we're going to be talking about, because I don't think I even actually mentioned what we're going to be talking about. I basically teased it, that Trump South African tweet from last week. He actually tweeted that the night before my birthday. So it was like, you know, happy birthday to me. Here's what you'll be talking about for the next week.
Here's what you're going to have to be Googling in right. the next couple of days.
Right. And I have to say, there is some cool lights going on in your... Is there like a...
I know, right? It's actually coming from my laptop. I think it's my screen. That's the camera hasn't gotten a lot of use lately, so I think it's kind of freaking out.
It was kind of cool. It looked like there was like some sort of homicide, maybe directly outside your house.
It's lit. And, it's definitely lit in here.
And there was, you know, police outside, and you were just,
this,
you know.
This is how I spent Monday nights, what can I tell you?
I appreciate you still coming on the show, as there seems to be some sort of criminal investigation outside.
Sure, it's not me. You're that important.
All right, so let's get right to it as I'm about to take a drink. It is hot in here.
I really hope it's not ice. If it's ice, that's the only reason I could have to leave. But
let me tell you, that would not be good.
No, although, that would not be good.
Although interesting live stream.
I do anything to give you views, I guess. What?
All right, so let's I'm choking now because I'm laughing. Let's get to this tweet. Actually, first I wanted to, you know, mention that just to talk about the president and what he's up to today, you know. Donald Trump, I gotta say, the way, I know this isn't why I brought you on the show, but I just really wanted to bring this up top because I just can't get over it. The way the media has been covering this flag at the White House going up and down for McCain is unbelievable. It's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever, like...
I kind of feel bad even for, like, the memory of the senator or whatever. Like do you want this to be what's being covered right now? Like, should this be the priority? At the same time, like, it's... Like, you can't deny that the drama is interesting, right? And how, to me, it's been fascinating to see how the far right, the super racist right, who never liked McCain, at this point is actually really mad with Trump for what they see as caving. Like, they were having they were enjoying the whole tantrum thing and the whole troll thing, because they like seeing, you know, that the person they got elected is basically as trolly as they are, but... It ended up, you know, caving because, like, normal decency and stuff.
Oh, I didn't even see that. So you're saying that the you know, the crazy right-wing Trump MAGA people are mad that he ended up putting the flag at half staff.
Yeah, they see it as caving to the establishment. And so, you know, like he was actually being celebrated for the whole trolley attitude of, like, I'll tweet, I'll release a statement, no statement, flags, no flags, like... Like, it's so sad that this is what we're wasting time on, because you have a president that can't even put up a statement, and you have a base that is so horribly virulent. Like, it's the extremism at which they've gotten to celebrate someone's death. And so it's just become an interesting political drama that sadly, it didn't need to be covered as in political drama, because it's, you know, a time for, you would expect people to be more respectful of what's going on, but it's what you get.
I know people are dying to know about this, so I'll just let it be. I'll just come out with it. Here at Doomed Headquarters, which is the corner of my apartment, I had my flag at half staff. And
all my flags are usually half staff.
Right, right.
Normally.
Right. And then the second Trump put his back to half staff, I immediately raised my flag to resist.
Fly
Trump.
It. Right. Fly it.
Right.
Fly it tall.
Right, right. I don't know what they did at, I know you said you got yours there. I don't know what they did at the Media Matter headquarters, but that's what we did here.
I only have Salvadoran flags around here. So I don't know if those are supposed to fly half staff.
You know what?
I don't know what the protocol is. He never went to war with us, right? So.
Right. Right.
At least we should be grateful. Not a lot of countries got to say that.
Right. So in honor of John McCain, I dedicate this episode of Doom to him, which is definitely doesn't mean anything. So so let's get like, right.
Like being a millionaire in Monopoly money.
Right, right. In fact, it probably desecrates the memory of anyone who has good memories of him, which I don't know, I guess maybe his family.
Which we apologize in advance.
Right.
I apologize for dedicating this episode of Doom to you.
Right.
But it's what you get.
Right, right. In fact, I'm going to also take the Trump South African tweet and say that's also in honor of John McCain.
To the memory.
Right, right. We should just dedicate everything to John McCain for the next year.
Just to troll the trolls, actually.
Right, right. In fact,
patriotism.
This episode might not even reference what we're going to talk about for the majority of the episode, and it'll just be titled "In Memory of John McCain." Maybe.
Period.
Maybe.
We should do like 45 minutes of silence, even.
Right. 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 And let's start right now. So the South African, let's not give Trump any ideas. He's already talking. Let's not get him talking about South America too. Jeez. So the South African Trump tweet from last week, where Trump discussed the fantastic, you know, let me just read the tweet because why not? Why not? And I did have it up and now it's gone. That's here it is. Okay, cool.
Fire your producer.
Right. I'm fired. So Donald Trump tweets out, on the night of August 22nd, the eve of my birthday, I have asked Secretary of State, Secretary Pompeo, which, by the way, he at first mentioned a Pompeo parody account or something, and had to delete the original tweet and retweet this with the proper account. So at Sec Pompeo, to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations.
This is my second language, so.
Right. And the large-scale killing of farmers. Which farmers? Oh, he continues. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. And he puts that part in quotations and then adds Tucker Carlson and adds Fox News. Now, it's no surprise. He didn't even have to add Tucker Carlson and add Fox News for us to figure this out. But, you know, Trump is a bumbling idiot. And there's no way Trump knew about this. No way Trump had any idea what was he probably never even knew there was a South Africa. And he got this information from Fox News because, of course. And you did a great job in a post for Media Matters, basically going through, you know, how this gets to Tucker Carlson to Donald Trump. And so let's start there. Before we get to Tucker Carlson and Fox News, let's start with, where does this whole white farmer, and I believe that the white supremacists who love pushing this trope go as far as to this is one of their main examples of their beloved white genocide.
Right. Like, this is to them like a data point that they are wildly it comes from misinterpreting a lot of crime statistics and basically manipulating the narrative so that it fits, right? Like you have the consistent trope that is white genocide is happening, like white people are the most persecuted and whatnot. But suddenly they have found like a narrative that they believe they can twist into fitting that and provide to in their opinion, some evidence that this horrible persecution is happening, ignoring all sorts of historical context, first of all, of South Africa and the apartheid, and ignoring the facts, which are that in South Africa, pretty much more than 3/4 of the land are owned by white owners. And the issue is that this disproportion is kind of part of the structures that are keeping inequalities and not just economic disparities, but a lot of like inequalities of opportunities in South Africa. They're kind of like these structures are the thing that perpetuates that. And so when you talk about like the first of all, the land seizures aren't happening yet. Like this is something that still needs to go through in South Africa through a constitutional amendment. Like it's a big deal. It's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. And so the fact that like you're going to pick and choose and claim that it's happening because people are white, like that's not the issue. That's not what's going on. So to give you a little more background on like when I read that tweet and then it disappeared, I thought that would happen because I'm optimistic and clearly delusional at this point. I thought what happened was that someone tackled Trump, right? And was like, no, dude, like this is not actually happening. Like we can't make policy on this. Like wait, like we have, here's a binder of years of policy with like South Africa. Like here's our ambassador on the phone. Like wait, you can't tweet that out. But no, it was what you said, right?
Can I pause you for a second?
He got the handle wrong.
Can I pause you for a second? Can you... This fantasy you just brought up. I need to picture which member of the administration you thought did this.
Because it was obviously not Dr. Gorka because he's not longer there. Right. But right, and like I can't imagine it was John Bolton because he would have bombed first and asked questions second. And so like you don't just. He wouldn't be involved necessarily. Like you would assume like there's somewhere like a very smart senior policy advisor who like went to school. He does hire the best people. And so like he went to school for years and knows the South African issue, right? And that
Who could that be in the Trump administration?
Right? And so you imagine like there's a young, you know, somewhere like person that prepared all their life for this moment, but no, that's not what's happening clearly, because the person who has, imagine having at your reach, basically at your orders, like any, like the best intelligence operation in the entire world, and deciding that you're going to take your policy advice from Fox News, which by the way, like this is the same channel where one time they tried to roast marshmallows with their bare hands. Like it's not where you go for, you know, that's, smart take.
That's the white culture that's dying, Christina. You have to understand. We gotta keep that. Don't you know that's what white America is all about?
Well, yes, about Africa. The issue is that it was like almost too irresistible for Tucker Carlson. You know, it was like too hard for him to stay away because he has for the longest time become like the champion for white grievance. And so you'll remember that this is the man that claims that people are offending the race of his children whenever anyone dares to be mean at white people, which is exactly how he framed the issue, ignoring the whole historical context of apartheid. Like that is, it's not that we are demanding some journalistic integrity of someone like Tucker Carlson, as we know is a grifter whose interests right now are mainstreaming and whitewashing, even white nationalism. Can you whitewash something that's already white?
Make it palpable for people who believe that stuff but don't like the language that's used by the Nazis and white supremacists?
Yeah, he's like, you know how some medicine comes in like gummy version?
Right, right.
So that it's not as gross. He's like the gummy white nationalism version for like people who are like, oh, yeah, actually I am a little offended. Like, and so,
you know, those faces he makes really does look like, you know, if a Sour Patch Kid came to life. So
right. And he's sitting on a very hot seat. So what we hadn't seen before, though, and this is something that actually I am very worried about, is Trump usually likes to tweet televised content, live tweeting it like it's a live event. But usually he sticks to the morning show. His favorite show is definitely Fox and Friends. My colleague Matt Gaetz has done the heroic labor, pretty much, of tracking which tweets are inspired by which segment, and has all the data up on our site of MediaMatters.org. But usually, other than Pirro, Trump doesn't necessarily watch Tucker Carlson. I figured it was because that's when his dinner is happening or whatever. But at this point, everyone should be worried, because this is, like I was telling you before, like the show where white nationalism gets mainstreamed every night. And it's not unusual to find a campaign that started on 4chan make its way to Tucker Carlson and be framed in the worst possible sensationalist light. Like, this is something that's happening everywhere in every college campus. And he will paint like the plights of white people as if they were comparable to the actual inequalities in this, like, disproportionate it's interesting that also
I'm sorry, you broke up just a little bit. Just repeat what you said. You just broke up a little bit. Last sentence.
I got hacked, maybe. it is worrisome that this is a show that is capturing the president's attention now, because it is also the show that mainstreams white nationalism, and it has been for a while. So it's not surprising that it would be on Tucker Carlson.
Right. And, you know, I always find it really interesting that it's Tucker Carlson who's doing this, because more so than any other Fox News host, even the more, like, you know, I'm not going to say mainstream or centric, they're all, you know, but there are levels of Fox News insanity. And Tucker Carlson's at the top of that. Yet he's the guy who has had a job at every cable news network. He's had some sort of legitimate, you know, news career. And he's the one who's most pushing white supremacy on Fox News, I'd say.
Yeah, he has a history. He has been on every single cable network. And he started, you know, like the Daily Caller gets away sometimes with the worst things. Like they have published the opinion, like in an op-ed from white nationalists, and got away with it with very little consequence. And so this is a guy that has very blatantly has not been subtle about, you know, his leanings, and yet has been allowed to fail upwards. Like you don't see, I feel like media in a way has sort of covered this connection from Tucker to white nationalism. Maybe when it became too late, maybe when it was already one of the shows with the most viewership. So at this point, it's really hard. He's proven to be made of Teflon, like nothing will stick, and there are really no consequences to this sort of coverage. And it is kind of something that now that that it's reached the precedent, a lot of people in the media are scrambling to figure out, like, what is this South Africa thing? And kind of trying to see where it came from. And if you're watching Tucker, you're actually reading 4chan from a year ago, and that's how the news is being made now. Like, right. It comes from the deepest corners of the internet.
Right. No, I mean, I've actually, you know, I've seen this whole South African farmer, white farmer thing around for a while now, and it was always something, you know, I'm sure you have too, of course, and you know, and it's always seemed like something that would have been like, you know, you can sort of, you know, when you're familiar with the scene and the personalities involved, like you and me are, you know, you can sort of tell in advance, okay, this one's going to hit. This one's going to be the big one. That one they're trying to push, it's too insider, and they don't realize that people who don't live in their bubble are going to understand that. Like, you know, when I saw QAnon earlier, in January of this year, I was like, okay, this is going to be big because it pretty much gives, is going to add fire to literally any conspiracy they want to wrap up into it.
Right.
So, you know.
It's a one size fits all.
Right, exactly. You know, it was sort of like, you know, people call it now like, you know, a Pizzagate on steroids or whatever random, and it's absolutely true. When I saw it, I was like, oh, so it's just like Pizzagate, except it could never end.
Like, except we'll never get rid of it because every news event will be bent to fit into the narrative.
Right. Right, because Pizzagate was about Comet Pizza having a basement, specifically Comet Pizza, specifically having this basement, specifically with kids in a dungeon down there. Once you go into Comet Pizza, go into the basement, which does not exist, and see that there are no kids down there, Pizzagate is over.
It's over. It's canceled. You can move it to a different restaurant, though, which they tried to do with Voodoo Donuts in Portland. But I don't think that one's sticking yet. Thank God.
Yeah, I actually did not see that. Okay, I learned something new on this one. I didn't see the Voodoo Donuts.
That one's called Donut Gate.
They're getting really original with these. Yeah.
Yep. It's happening. It's brought to you by YouTube. I
want to know what these people eat. Like, you know, they're giving themselves little to no room to ever say that they feel like insert food here tonight, because then I'm going to eventually assume that they too are pedophiles or whatever they're claiming these things now mean. I don't know.
They can't do soy anymore. So, yeah, it's very limited. Maybe the universe of possibilities.
Maybe we actually feed these things, keep giving them leaked quote-unquote emails of us saying we want some sort of meal, run through all of the basic the food groups, groups right? And then we starve them to death.
There you go. You should be making policy for the administration. It sounds like you're incredibly prepared.
Let me say though, if I knew that, you know, I can work for the administration and come out as a resistance hero with a GoFundMe account with hundreds of thousands of dollars in it, I would have joined the administration. I would have joined the administration. I could have got a book deal like Omarosa. I could have got almost $200,000 like a Michael
you could
Cohen.
Show videos that prove nothing at all, but that can't get a lot of play on cable news at the expense of real news, but
right.
It, you know, Omarosa did it for what was it, a week that she dominated the news cycle, I would say.
Yeah, and now and then she'll come back in saying she's got something interesting to unveil, and it's like, you know, a toilet flushing in the White House that she claims is Trump using the bathroom or something
as evidence of collusion.
Right, exactly. He's flushing the evidence, right? So
it wouldn't be hard. It wouldn't be that hard to get that job. I don't know. I would be applying for you.
Or, you know, I could have been an FBI agent and, oh man, that racket's even better apparently. Just leak my text messages that show I disliked both Trump and Hillary Clinton, and I'd be rolling in dough. People would be paying me money to make up for my pension, even though my wife makes six figures working for another body of government, part of the government.
You know, you could get away with it. I would say let's just start a legal fund today, preemptively, like before we actually get in trouble.
Right.
Like if Michael Cohen has one. Yeah.
You know, it's really, and someone mentioned in the YouTube comments right now how Donut Twitter is going to have an existential crisis when they realize there's a donut gate on the right, and they're going to have to figure out what to do with the donut emojis in their You know all about that. I'm sure you did it, don't you? Yeah. So, I guess it's easy to go back and forth between the resistance grift and the conservative grift. Maybe that's the Kent State gun girl's next move to join the resistance. Who knows?
Maybe. That would be that would be a good PR move for her, I think.
Right. Right.
She's been on InfoWars lately, so she definitely has the platform.
Right, right. You know, Trump might eventually, you know, become a resistance grifter himself. Who knows? He might just start resisting himself and they'll throw money at him, you know? You know, I do feel like, though, you know, when you talk about this stuff, if you don't, like, you know, if you don't make fun of it like we're doing right now, then it literally is so insane. Like, you can't make sense of it. Like, you have to deal with this stuff by literally making it, like, pointing out how dangerous it is, obviously, but also by mocking the shit out of it so people realize that while it's dangerous, yes, let's take away any power it could possibly have, so the few people who end up, like, believing this shit
right.
are, like, in this little bubble where, like, the world is laughing at them. We're not there yet, but I think, you know, I think the laughs are on our side.
I think we're getting there, especially with Milo. Like, if you read Milo's post, in which basically he was berating his fans for not sustaining his lavish lifestyle, I mean, we are there. Like, we think, I feel like we've gotten to the place where the laughs are on our side, because once you point out, I think the best way to frame it is by showing how these people are grifters without a conscience, and basically they're doing this for the lulls or for the clicks, and they are literally profiting from spewing this bullshit. And so one of the, I think the frame of the grift is uniquely accurate, but also it takes a lot of power off of them, because instead of that painting of, like, patriotic heroes, of, like, concerned citizens for their country, kind of, like, goes away once you realize they are asking for money and they're just looking for YouTube clicks and they are just creating, like, hashtag content. So in a way, what we should be framing, not just the grift side, but also the media kind of facilitated and enabled all these things, and how, you know, in a way, if there wasn't the incentive to get clicks to say horrible things, perhaps they wouldn't quite go that far, right? Like,
right. You know, that's an interesting point. And, you know, to bring it back actually to the Trump South African tweet, because we're sort of going in reverse. We went with talking about how we got to Trump and how, you know, Tucker Carlson gave it to him, but, you know, the grifters are the ones who got it to Tucker. Well, Tucker Carlson's a grifter himself in many ways, but the right. independent grifters, the internet conservative grifters, are the ones who got it to Tucker Carlson. You know, and you know, probably the person I've seen talk about the white farmer issue more than anyone other than the you know, taking the South African you know, white supremacists out of the picture, because I was looking into, you know, those, like, Afro Forum and you know, there's you know, there's certainly, that's where it all stems from. You know, it's not like Lauren Southern went to South Africa and found out that herself that there was some sort of issue going on with farmers in South Africa and decided to spin it into something bigger than whatever was actually going on, you know, and misrepresenting what was actually going on. She's got no idea.
She saw a narrative that was incredibly convenient after all of her stunts failed last year, specifically her stunts with the European identitarians, and saw a great opportunity for this was the story that she was born to tell, if we're being honest.
Exactly. So, no, please go ahead with that, because she is the one who really pushed. Like, she took this story and she was like, all right, I'm going to use this to define me as a conservative, almost. Like, she made this her bread and butter. Like, and I feel like that, you know, along with, you know, getting into a boat and trying to stop immigrants from
refugees.
And refugees, yeah, going to Europe, which didn't really work in her favor, because let me tell you, she just got, like, in legal trouble and stopped not a single refugee, I believe, right?
But, and can't go to the UK ever,
right.
So...
Right, but I think the thing is, and I want you to go into her now, but I think the thing is, she took this up because I think by taking up this niche issue, you sort of establish yourself in the base of this community as a somebody.
Exactly. And the issue is, at first, she yes, she didn't write this narrative, but she was very incredibly useful as a tool to kind of bring it to North America, because this is something that Afroforum and the Soot-Landers, the group that Simon Roche is a part of, had been kind of lobbying into the conservative American conservative movement and the American libertarian movement from the perspective of like property values, like property kind of defending private property. But the issue is that they would also insert like the aspect of it, like specifically targeting white farmers, leaving out that white farmers are most of the people who have land, right? And so they would make it an issue. Soot-Landers specifically made it an issue of race survival, pretty much, because to them, and the way that they forever made money and existed as a nonprofit organization, is by presenting their cause that they champion as one of the survival, like apocalyptic survival of like the white people. And so this is extremely sexy for some of the American racists, because they also see current immigration environment and kind of the Trump rhetoric as confirmation that the U.S. is also in kind of a race, apocalyptic race to preserve white people, which is absolutely not happening. So people like Jared Taylor, right, who are more, I would call them like your establishment racists, right. Also thought that this was like a really sexy topic. But like outside of that little bubble, it hadn't really left that bubble of like the white papers, the pseudo like intellectual racism bubbles. But then you had Afroforum, who was a lot more successful than I would say Soot-Landers had been into inserting it into the conversation, because they even came on a big racist tour to the U.S. and to promote their cause. And they were able to sit with think tanks here and get a meeting with one of Ted Cruz's like policy advisors. And in the issue is that they got sort of this veneer of legitimacy to their issue because they were able to do all that. But then Lawrence Southern gave them the push that they needed to go mainstream, which is get them in the most powerful platform you can get right now, which is YouTube. And so depending on what, you know, algorithm you have and what you've been watching, a series of clicks would lead you to be extremely interested with the South Africa white plight, right? Like depending on what you're watching, you could end up there and find the evidence that you've been dying to get, which is that actually white people are being persecuted. And so like you get this super powerful rhetorical tool, because that's what it is. It's a rhetorical tool that's not, I'm like, the evidence is just not there to support that. But like no one really cares, because that's what they want to hear. And then the biggest push comes once it entered like the YouTube mainstream. It was a matter of time until a producer in Tucker Carlson's show probably saw it. And then there we go. Actually, Afroforum went on Tucker Carlson's show. So they had already gotten the big platform, but this was, in a way, the issue that Tucker Carlson was also kind of waiting for a story like that, but it had never, I don't think it would have left the sort of intellectual, pseudo-intellectual white bubble, like white supremacist bubble, if it hadn't been for something as powerful as a YouTube documentary, or to have the grifters of the new right, used previously known as the alt-right, who started tweeting about it as a very convenient rhetorical tool. You'll remember Mike Cernovich last year, I think, when he was living this illusion of grandeur that he wanted to be appointed like ambassador to somewhere. Right. And
my old pal, Mike Cernovich. Yep.
Yeah. I feel like he thought that those like Trump Jr. likes were going to get him somewhere in the diplomatic world. And so this is an issue that he absolutely like pushed way back when no one was talking about it. And now like this has gotten like presidential attention, because it's the sort of thing that absolutely feeds into the Trump rally materials, right? Like, to prove that this is an oppressed class, and now everything's going to change. Everyone's going to say Merry Christmas now. Like, this is the kind of this is why this is useful, right? Because it's vague. You have to actually go in and read the data to put it together and understand a bunch of historical context of the apartheid. So no one's going to do that, but it's a great line.
Are you saying Trump didn't look into this before tweeting that out?
I'm sure there were plenty of binders of historical relationships between the U.S. and South Africa.
It was delivered by the imaginary guy you were talking about earlier.
Or woman, right? Oh,
that's like, true, yes. That's yeah, true,
this,
yeah.
This policy expert, maybe it's a team, you know? South Africa's a pretty big country.
I'll be honest, just because the tweet was like at like 10:30 at night, I did picture when we were talking about it, I did picture like a sleepy Ben Carson walking in with the binders. Just like half asleep going like, Mr. President, here's the binders, and just going like, what is he even doing there? He's not supposed to be in the White House. But
he shouldn't be there, no.
But I just picture like him wearing a nightcap.
I got you this from the Housing and Urban Development Department. So there you go. All of our policy on South Africa.
Right, right. Little did I know there was a cabinet file all the way in the corner just with a few files on South African farms.
Yeah, on the remodeled furniture that he got for like hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think.
Right, right, right. So when this gets, you know, I'm looking at just some of the names who've been talking about this. You know, you got Lucian, two racist for Gateway pundit Whitridge.
Imagine.
Right. You got Gavin McGinnis.
And this is another pet issue for Gavin McInnes, right? Because he's the king of, oh, this is racist. Between him and Tucker Carlson, I believe that if he didn't need advertisers to support his time on air, Tucker Carlson would absolutely speak like Gavin McInnes. Like, there's very, very little difference, I would say, between like the content, like the themes that they tackle, the topics that they choose. You could even say like that, oh my God, are they sharing producers? Like, it's literally very similar in what they choose to elevate on their shows. The difference is just on the degree to which they want to be subtle about the racism. And to me, the reason that Gavin McInnes is not subtle and Tucker Carlson is because one needs advertisers and the other one doesn't. So that's all that's keeping us from hearing the fully converted Tucker Carlson.
Right, right. And then, you know, there's one name that, you know, surprisingly, I've not really talked about much on this show because he's sort of lost his, I don't know, his platform, I guess, in many ways. But his name comes up a lot when I looked into this. And Mike Painovich, yeah.
I have no idea actually how you pronounce it, but previously known as Mike Enoch.
Right, right,
right.
And he's someone who, you know, I very familiar with Mike Enoch, that name that he went by. And then literally, like, must have been right before or maybe right when I started this podcast, that's when his life got, he got doxxed and his life changed, and he went from being like one of the biggest up and coming names in that white supremacist right wing alt right world, and he's basically become a laughing stock. But
right.
But in many ways, though, you know, him early on, I feel like a lot of the things that he pushed, not just this sort of thing, but a lot of the things he pushed, you know, sort of he certainly played a role in getting it out there.
Oh, absolutely. This is South Africa was, you didn't even need to explain what specifically you were talking about. South Africa was sort of shorthand for the tweets and the sort of conversations that you can see in Gab and in the furthest right corners of white nationalists, of two online white supremacists, I would say. South Africa was something that consistently came up because it allowed that to present the sort of race for survival in a very like amazing race terms of this is what's going to happen when demographic changes make white people a minority in this country. And because it was a very, it became shorthand for that sort of plight. And in a way, like to see it to them, it was absolutely a celebration to see that the precedent, just to use a Channer reference, Donald Trump, our guy, was tweeting about the thing that they've been very invested in, right? And so it was kind of validating in a way that nothing, like there's people, you know, there's really good people from both sides. Nothing has been that validating since this, like South Africa was like the next big thing to be a huge bone thrown at white nationalists in this country.
Right, right. And, you know, when you look at you brought up what was actually going on in South Africa earlier. But, you know, when you look at, you know, the way conservatives use it, like, it's not an exact, you know, it's not an exact, you know, comparison. But, you know, if you are a white farmer in South Africa who's went under an issue over there, who's been maybe attacked, some sort of violence or whatever, you know, it's not like conservatives are actually caring about you. Like, you're being used. Just like, you know, it's almost like the same way conservatives like to bring up, I don't know, about, you know, when there's a shooting in some sort of major American city and how no one cares about that. They're paying attention to some other dumb issue that the conservatives want to care about that's in no way the same. You know, they're just using that. Like, it's not like they're actually invested in the actual people who are in South Africa who might be affected by whatever changes go on over there.
And that's the issue in and of its own, like international relations and kind of like foreign policy is not a very sexy issue to campaign on. And so to the Trump base, the issue isn't necessarily what's going on in the extremely complex politics and extremely complex crime sort of situation that's going on in South Africa. That's not what's attractive about this narrative. It's really that it's a very useful and sign of the sort of quality that Trump gets to push on his rallies usually.
Right. And we'll just see more to this. You know, I don't think there's going to be any sort of all of a sudden someone's going to be like, the South Africa thing was a little bit, you know, we went too far. Maybe we shouldn't have brought that up. Maybe we were throwing too big of a bone to the outright white supremacists. I don't think that's happening.
No, I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. And I also think that, like you said at the beginning, it provided a very interesting case study for how the pipeline works, for how to see that you can start pushing a small cause, like in whichever corner of the internet. And if you get these influential white nationalists, online white nationalists, to believe and embrace your cause, you can end up getting into the precedent through these channels that are now very obvious. It goes from the deepest corners of the internet to the mainstreaming via YouTube, to becoming sort of a meme among the online white nationalists, to then probably Tucker Carlson, and it ends at the presidential Twitter feed.
Right. You know, seeing mainstream conservatism caring so much about a couple dozen attacks, which, of course, bad, but, you know, a couple dozen attacks in South Africa, I'm assuming next we'll see them talk about the ethnic cleansing, the mass ethnic cleansing going on in Southeast Asia against Muslims, right? I mean,
you would hope, right, that the same passion and advocacy devoted to the conservation of a group, you know, would, if for consistency's sake, right, you would imagine that, but it's not that one's not convenient, like, because
sure, I'm just gonna can we just sit here for a few hours waiting for that Trump tweet on the
Yeah, I'm sure it's happening today. I'm sure Tucker will cover it tomorrow promptly.
Right. All right.
And this is the other issue. A lot of the journalists who try to cover this, and back when this was started, one of the people who did a fantastic job in kind of tying the white supremacy roots of this narrative was the blog Angry White Men. And they it was an amazing job at mapping it out and showing how this groups, African white supremacist groups were basically making a lot of inroads with the American racist establishment and getting some of them to champion their cause. And so whenever he wrote about this, it brought a lot of harassment from the extreme right saying like, oh, so you're defending like massacres and you're defending brutal murders. And it was like, no, that's absolutely not what anyone's doing. Like, no one is for the murder of anyone. It's just that you are exploiting these murders to present an idea of race oppression that is just not there, that does not exist, and that taken outside of the very complex historical context of South Africa is just, it's intellectually dishonest and manipulative.
Right. It's there's no, you know, and I hope that's what people take away from this. They hope, you know, number one, they understand how this got to where it got with President Trump. But also, you know, if these are issues, if you're a conservative on YouTube, because there's a ton of them on YouTube, and we've discussed this on the show before, that the left's got to get more of a showing on YouTube, man. We're losing the YouTube battle. We might be winning it elsewhere, but YouTube really is the platform for right wingers. They've owned this platform. But anyway,
it's what talk radio was in the 90s.
Yeah. Right, right. So, you know, if you're a conservative who stumbled upon this and you actually care about these issues, but don't consider yourself a white supremacist, then first of all, what do you do? Either you are a white supremacist or you're not a conservative. But anyway, but, you know, this isn't the route to talking about these things or to care about these things. Like, Tucker Carlson isn't shining a light because he actually cares about these South African farmers, black or white. He's not shining a light on the past weekend in Chicago when it comes to shooting or whatever. He's not trying to shine a light because he cares about those people. No, he's doing it because it fits his narrative of what he wants to push, his white supremacist narrative. And quite frankly, they don't care. Like, insert any sort of event in any country, in any city, that pushes their right-wing extremist ideology, and that's where they'll be. They'll show up there, and they'll be ready and waiting to tell you all about it on the Fox News channel.
The story they were born to tell, exactly. Like, it's just a convenient story, and what's very, you know, we laugh a lot, but at the end of the day, like, Tucker Carlson's show on primetime is one of the most watched. So there's people who are actually listening to these stories, and it's clicking. It's clicking, right. And that's dangerous and very scary, to be honest.
Right. Man, it's too bad we just didn't let that guy who had that 8 o'clock slot stay on, right? I mean,
we were between a rock and a hard place, and I don't know who lost more.
I will say this, though. I know people, older people, who've told me, and I mean, you would guess people in my family, like older, you know, grandparents' age, who you know, when they were watching, you know, and watch Fox News or whatever, and they would tell me, you know, they liked Bill O'Reilly, but they didn't like the other people on Fox. There was something about Bill O'Reilly that somehow was appealing to people. Like, he didn't turn them off. Like, I remember specifically being told that Sean Hannity was disgusting, but this was from a Bill O'Reilly watcher.
That is both are correct.
Right.
I don't know that he clicked with audiences. Which, by the way, O'Reilly definitely tweeted about South Africa immediately after.
Right. So right. He definitely is no better. But I would say the way he presented himself, he was a master at basically the dog whistle. He knew how to play that whistle in many different tunes.
In a way that others like Laura Ingraham haven't really learned, and they just like go out with the, you know, not the dog whistle, the bullhorn, I would say.
Right. It's like how I sort of talk about Rush Limbaugh and Alex Jones. Both terrible, horrible people. But, you know, if they were talking about something else, if they weren't political talking heads or conspiracy theorists going after the...
Or gross misogynists.
Right.
Or...
They actually have talent as broadcasters. Like, they're not, you know, the guy on YouTube or Periscope, like a Mike Cernovich, blabbing away with no talent whatsoever. These are people who maybe in another life, if they were good people, could have maybe been sports broadcasters or actually had some sort of respectable career.
Had they not chosen the life of the grift.
Right. Alex Jones right. could have narrated movie trailers, I bet.
The facts are gay.
All right. Thank you so much. I know, I don't know if I held you for too long. I remember we were talking about how much time. But Christina Lopez of Media Matters, she is the deputy director of for extremism. And I just want to thank you for coming on. This was fantastic.
Thank you.
I would really like you to come on again in the near future.
All right. Let's make that happen whenever I, you know, have another hour of my Monday.
Right. Well, you know, what else are you going to do? Watch Monday Night Raw, yeah. WWE?
No, I'm not that cool.
Okay. You know,
I'd rather come online and talk racism, I guess.
That's let's just leave it there. I don't know how else to put it. As a wrestling fan, that's probably one of the greatest things I ever heard in my life. I'd rather come online and talk racism than watch WWE. Perfect.
You're welcome.
Christina, have a good night.
Have a good night. Happy to help.
Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our show. I will stay on for a little bit longer to read. There's a lot of comments today. So I will not be able to get to them all like I usually do. That's good. That means this channel's growing a little bit when I can't scroll back and get the comments. Catch up on the comments. So if you want me to read something, if you want me to see a comment or answer a question, ask it now. If you already have, repost it. Let's go. I'm going to put me on. There we go. All right. So let's talk about. Oh, yeah. So this week, apparently, there is no live Majority Report episodes. So if you're a Majority Report listener, it's good to see all 3,500 of you watching live on the YouTube channel right now, on this YouTube channel right now. People who are in the YouTube channel right now watching the live stream, please don't tell the podcast listeners that there are actually not 3,500 people watching this live stream, like watch the daily Majority Report live stream. There's less than 1% of that, but we don't need to tell the podcast audience about that. So 3,500 people are watching this live stream right now, trying to catch up on all these comments. And all right. Is Matthew Binder reading our chat? Can we ask him questions here? Asks Nicola Dimitri. Of course. Of course. Of course. Let's see. I wanted to. Okay, so, you know, last week was my birthday, folks. I'm now 32 years old. I'm an old man. I'm an old man. And, you know, last week, actually, you know, for those of you who know me, I have a dog with a 16 going on 17-year-old dog who has kidney issues. But, you know, that's from old age. And then we just found out that our cat, who is not old, well, I mean, you know, she's not a senior. She's a 6-year-old cat. We've had her for about 5 years. She has kidney issues. And somehow the cat's kidney issues are worse than the dog's. You know, the dog is old, so no surprise there. But the cat, we adopted the cat and found out that she had a number of issues stemming from crazy allergies. Like the cat is literally allergic to itself. We had to give her medicine daily from the very moment we adopted her, so basically she doesn't like scratch her face off because she's constantly without this medicine, you know, her immune system attacks herself. So I've been dealing with that. Happy birthday to me. I know, I just found out about the cat last week. So, you know, I thought I'd give you guys a little update. I didn't have a show last week, But catching up now, and we will have our full show lineup. There'll be no show missed. I try to usually do that, you know, double up where I can, or instead of, you know, spacing it out like I usually do, I just make that space a little bit smaller and fit it all in there. Renee asks, how old are you in ferret years? I actually had a ferret. And my ferret lived to, I think it was 6 or 7. Had her for him for 5 years. In fact, I have a tattoo on my ear that I got in memory of my ferret back in 2009 when I was a wee young lad. I don't say that as if I regret the tattoo. I actually like the tattoo. It's, I'm not going to leave it. I'll leave it in suspense. What kind of ferret-related tattoo can someone possibly have on their ear? I'll let the suspense go for that one. It's the drinking water, Matt, says Renee. Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't. Cat ching up, says Dragon Slayer. And I get some happy birthday wishes. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate that. James DeMitt says, Binder is a bit younger than me. What the fuck? What have I done with my life? Wait. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I'm 32. So are you? Well, I don't know. It's possible. You're a bit younger. I mean, 32 isn't like, I'm acting like it's not possible for someone to be older than me. I don't know why. So I'm like 1.5 in ferret years, says Renee. Yeah. I guess. So patreon.com/MattBinder, to support this show. Actually, unfortunately had lost some patrons this month who specifically reached out to me, and you don't have to do this, folks, please, but they felt like they wanted to specifically reach out to me. He was like, just two people who said they were going back to school and money was going to be tighter. And so they had to cut out basically all their Patreon, subscriptions. And I just hope, you know, if you have to do that, please still listen to the show. It's free. But also, if you can afford to subscribe, we're just a handful of members away from me doing the members-only bonus stuff. And we've been at that point. We've been stuck at that point for many, many weeks now. But it'll be the first month where there isn't growth, actually, if we don't get like a month or two, a subscriber or two by the end of August. So the charts have gone up, but then come September 1st, they might be a smidge down. But no big deal. No big deal. What could I do? Hopefully, the election season coming in. You know, we got 2018 elections coming up, and then 2020 coming on the road. You know, maybe I'll get that bump like Cedar did. My dad jumps in the comments and asks, is that tattoo of Giuliani yelling at the ferret guy on his radio show? Yes, yes it is. Yes, thank you. Sean Zone asks, are you going to have Michael Brooks on again? I don't know if he'll want to come on again after last week. This show last week, I should say. he probably hasn't even listened to it. Someone pointed out my shirt. My ECW, it's actually the Paul Heyman guy shirt, but it is in the ECW font. It's a Paul Heyman guy t-shirt. For those of you not familiar, Paul Heyman is the guy who started ECW. And then when he joined WWE later on, he had this whole gimmick where he would pick guys who he would manage and they'd become Paul Heyman guys because everyone wanted to be managed by Paul Heyman, because if he manages you, it means you're going to be a big deal. And during this time, he managed CM Punk. He managed Brock Lesnar. So, yeah, if you were going to be Paul Heyman guy, it means you were pretty big. He also managed for a short time Curtis Axel, which for those of you asking who, that's, yeah, pretty much. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, though, Paul. Renee, Jamie Peck and Kelly Carey undoomed. Yeah. I'm absolutely down for that. I'll reach out to them for sure. I've actually never really interacted with Jamie other than maybe like a tweet or two, if even that. You know, we got that Majority Report bond, former and current producers, you know. But yeah, I've never really interacted with her, but that doesn't mean she can't come on the show. That'd be a perfect opportunity to interact with her. And Kelly, yeah, I've met her, you know, worked with her when she was at Majority Report for a short time. I was already gone by the time she jumped on, but I'm the one who handed the reins off to her and Matt Leck. So, yeah. Dissident Peasant says, yeah, dude, he did listen to it, and you got me in trouble with Brooks for real. Thanks. He got angry? Come on. You know, Michael is so, you know, he's, what did he say about me, first of all? And then when he heard that, and, you know, he's too soft, man. He's always been that way. He's like a little baby. You got to nurture. You got to, you know, hold. So he's, you know, he gets upset. He cries. You have to hold him, pat him on the back, let him cry on your shoulder. Let him get it out of his system. Listen, when you talk about this drama, the family drama, I hope you guys are joking. Because for me, my feud, and I say that with the utmost sarcasm, with Michael, is always just me messing with him because it's funny. There's no actual issue. Maybe with Michael there is, because like I said, he's soft. S-A-W-F-T, soft, I should say. Even though Enzo and Big Cass are no longer with the WWE. And there you go, there's my wrestling reference for the episode. Yeah. Oh, wait, Jesse asks, do you have a favorite Michael Brooks impression? I will always love Right Wing Mandela because I helped him come up with it. I couldn't do the impression. That's his. But I was in the room. This is before we even moved to Brooklyn. The studio moved to Brooklyn. This is when we were in a closet in the shadow of the Empire State Building, if you guys remember the old opening of the Majority Report, before it was the Gowanus Canal opening. And some of you might know what I'm talking about. We came up with that based on, and he's probably told you the origins of it before, when Rick Santorum tried to claim that Right Wing Mandela was actually a conservative. My dad says, all my kids know how to push buttons. It's true. I got nothing on my younger, not my youngest brother, but my brother, my younger brother. That kid knows how to push buttons. I wish I could push buttons like he can. Kid can get on anybody's nerve. Hi, Josh. Not mine, though, actually, funny enough. He gets on everybody else's nerves, but he never really went after me. It's almost like there's a mutual bond between people, between the button pushers. But I will give him the number one spot. I'm second on whatever it's called, the podium. Nicola says, I've only been watching MR for like 8 months. Yeah, it's crazy, man. How many people jumped on the MR train after I left? Hope it wasn't people were avoiding the show because of me. Although that would have been pretty funny. Renee says, gotta invite Josh on then. Yeah. He's also the sibling who became a banker. So I can't have him on this show. He goes against everything I stand for. Sorry, Josh. Let's see. Jesse, I still get royalty. You talking about for the Majority Report episodes I was on? Oh, for Right Wing Mandela. No. I should get a percentage of the episodes Michael Brooks show that he used the Right Wing Mandela on, because it was a MR property that I helped him create. And once he takes it off the show, you know, there should be some sort of royalty scheme for both me and Sam. And I'm pretty sure there might be a royalty scheme for Sam, actually, because Michael uses Sam's studio for the Michael Brooks show. So I'm missing out. It's all right. It's all right. That's how it happened. That's how it works, right? That's how it works. If you're watching the live stream right now, you guys are viewing my eyes at the beginning of the episode. Nice, you know, big-eyed Binder. I don't know why I'm calling myself that. And I can feel myself now about, you know, an hour, 10 minutes in. My eyes are about half shut. I'm starting to talk nonsense. I don't think nonsense, but I'm, rambling a bit. But, you know, it probably makes for even better YouTube, you know? I gotta say, it's really weird. I used to be like a night person. Like, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just wide awake, no problem. And then really in the past few months, especially in the past few weeks, maybe because of all the stuff I'm doing, you know, between, you know, before with earlier in the year with Cafe and then other stuff with their parent company, and then now working at Mashable, and then throughout all this, still working on the Cynthia Nixon campaign. Been really exhausted lately. And then top it all off, I got a kid and 2 sick pets. I'm going crazy. I'm going insane, folks. You're going to start hearing me spouting left-wing conspiracy theories. Before you know it, I'm going to be talking about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, tech guy, and what he had to do with the DNC voter database or whatever it is they're claiming he did. And I'm going to start bringing up Seth Rich. Before you know it, I'm going to start watching Jimmy Dore. Theo says, big-eyed Binder on the failing Mashable. Oh, something interesting on the Mashable front, actually. I'm going to be doing more YouTube coverage on Mashable, which just so happened to happen, you know. Just pure coincidence, actually. After I went on that rant on the last episode about how YouTube is very undercovered when it comes to basically, you know, web culture and politics, just, you know, how it's being used in everyday life in general. Like, you know, the amount of time spent talking on Facebook and policy and Twitter's latest updates and Instagram and Snapchat, YouTube really is ignored. And I'm hoping I'm going to be able to, you know, put a little bit more of a light on YouTube. So, yes, that's right, Kennedy. Hillary has Parkinson's, and I will start foaming from the mouth, like you said, yes. Theo, yeah, those ICU pets are too much meat. Dragon Slayer says, big-eyed Binder equals anime Binder. That'd be, you know, better than Sleepy Binder. One of the ninth dwarf. Theo, how the dog shit algorithm suggests Nazis all the goddamn time. Yes, absolutely. Nicola says Seth Rich was murdered. That's it. That's what I'm going to be saying soon. So I better jump off before I become a sleepy, crazed left-wing Binder. the debate between Cynthia Nixon and Andrew Cuomo is this Wednesday, and you should watch it if you can. I think it's gonna be very interesting. It's gonna be the first time Andrew Cuomo debates someone in 12 years. to give you sort of an example of how Andrew Cuomo, his feet are really being held to the fire by Cynthia. He felt he could avoid Zephyr Teachout in 2014, who, by the way, is running a fantastic campaign for New York Attorney General. Easy. I was going to vote for her easily, you know, the second I heard her throw her hat in the ring. But man, what a fantastic, you know, campaign she's running for New York Attorney General. You know, and then Cynthia is running a great campaign, obviously, for governor. And I, obviously, full disclosure, I am working on that campaign. But, you know, my point with bringing up Zephyr is that usually, you know, obviously gubernatorial campaigns get exposure and media attention. But Zephyr Teachout is doing a great job as attorney general candidate, you know, really sort of grabbing the daily news cycle. Dragon Slayer, are we gonna get live binger coverage of this? The debate? I can't do live coverage of it. Probably. Like, is it a live stream coverage of it? Probably. I'll be tweeting about it. Because I'll be doing some other stuff. But maybe I'll think about doing some sort of, if it's, you know, if it's as good as I think it's going to be, maybe, and don't quote me on this, if you're listening to the podcast, this is pointless because you might be listening to this after it's already passed, and it may not even have happened, but maybe I'll consider doing some sort of, after the debate, later that night, I don't know, some sort of, like, replay of it, if I can, because, again, it's on CBS, so it's going to be tricky in terms of copyright with YouTube and everything. Let's not even get to any promises or anything for sure, and even maybes. But on that day, I will look into it and see if it's possible, and I will let you know that day if I'm going to just jump online that night and do something with that debate footage. 10-foot man says Matt is cute, and I think that's where I'm going to end it. Theo says, oh my God, do you know Miranda? I do. Yes, that's right. I have met Cynthia more than once. I have been, I've been working with the campaign for a while. So I have met her for sure. Matt Binder's actually the Mr. Big, says Renee. Day after coverage, asked James. Listen, I know you guys are lacking Majority Report this week, so maybe I will have to do something extra this week. Maybe that'll be the episode I missed from last week. I was, you know, thinking of getting a guest, but maybe I'll just jump on and do some coverage of the debate and how that went. That makes sense. Maybe we'll just do that. That would be episode 30, I believe, too, of Doomed. Maybe episode 30 is just me and you. Me, Matt Binder, and the listeners. Doomed with Matt Binder and the Legion of Doomed. Yeah, that was corny, but what do you want from me? What do you want from me? Dragonslayer 19 starts quote of Binder saying he promised to do coverage of Nixon debate, both live coverage and post dissection of it. Yep. James says, awesome. Thanks for the show tonight, Matt. 10-foot man. Yes. Great show. Thank you. And I'm not going to read that last comment, Renee, but I'll read your previous one. They should get you to do the fake sign language translation for the debate. Matt, throwback. Nicola says, do you feel optimistic about Cynthia's prospects? Father Samuel has seemed unenthusiastic about her chances lately. I'm scared. Listen, without a doubt, it's an uphill battle. That's from the very beginning. And the polls, again, I'm not saying anything that isn't already public knowledge, have not been in her favor. But again, the public polls have been polling people who are, they poll usual voters, people who they expect to vote in the primary. And we're seeing time and time again in these elections these primary elections, that's not been the constituency here. Of course, those people come out and vote, and the amount of those people who come out and vote have been the deciding factor in many of these races. But even the losing races have been closer than they would have been normally, you know, pre-Trump, pre-2016. So, you know, this is what I think. She's got a real good shot. She got a better shot than Zephyr Teachout, I think. In 2014, I think Zephyr Teachout is the favorite for Attorney General, if we're talking about her race this year. But listen, what I'm seeing is that Cynthia Nixon is connecting with the people who vote in a primary. The question is, will the resistance, the anti-Trumpers, the Democratic base who hates Trump so much, will they come out and vote for Andrew Cuomo, the guy who's got $64,000 donated from Donald Trump, whose coffers are actually filled by many of the people who also donate to Trump, who's being endorsed by this time around, not just talking about previously, by people like Ken Langone, the conservative CEO of Home Depot who funds conservatives. Yeah, he's endorsed Andrew Cuomo for governor. Is the resistance, do they hate Trump so much that they're going to vote for someone who's basically a mirror image of Trump, but with the D instead of his name, instead of the R? Will they come out and vote for Andrew Cuomo simply because he has the experience of growing up with a dad who was governor, who had it handed to him his whole life, and became governor? That's the experience he has. Will they vote for that experience over Cynthia Nixon, a lifelong, really, organizer and activist, especially when it comes to education, which is a huge issue in New York State? She's also been very active with environmental activism. She's also come out and been one of the few. Even, I mean, just talking, you know, it's one thing to get a celebrity of any sort to embrace democratic the label of democratic socialism. You know, but we have, you know, and I would like him to win in Maryland, but we had Ben Jealous come out and say, try to push away from the democratic socialist label on his campaign. You know, I still want him to win, obviously, but, you know, she's embraced it. How often do you see that? I mean, if it's just stunning to me if she, you know, if, yeah, I'm speechless when it comes to the fact that the people who wanted so badly for a first woman president, which I totally get, and, you know, and here you have Cynthia Nixon. Someone who I've even supported Hillary in 2016. Because she too wanted to see the first woman president. You know, here you have her though now running on this progressive platform. Which she's always been. You know, she's always been a more of a, from what I've understood of her activism throughout the year, she's always been more of a Bernie Sanders type. In terms of Bernie Sanders type supporter, even though she endorsed Hillary. She was a Hillary person, I should say, in the primary. You know, but here you have someone who would be the first ever, not only woman governor of New York, but the first LGBT person. And they're not, if those people don't line behind her, then, you know, really, really, if there should be no question about what that whole, the whole thing trying to paint the Bernie bros as some sort of anti-identity politics. That's all, couldn't be clearer that was all bullshit. Just all for show. All used for their own political gain if they don't get behind Cynthia Nixon. All right, well, I just went on a rant there. But Listen, really, none of that opinion is something that I haven't already given you guys on Twitter, and really wasn't based on anything more than what I think you guys should be able to see from just how all the public and the media, the public polling and the media has been covering that race. I think she's got a better shot than Zephyr Teachout had in 2014, and Zephyr Teachout had nothing in 2014 and grabbed a shockingly high vote total. All right. I've been told to buy the book by China Tzu. In fact, I had a pre-digital copy of the Chapo book for months. But I will be buying the book because I got to support those guys and their book endeavor. But yeah, I've had the digital version of the book for a while now. It's what happens when you've got a when you're an insider like me, folks. Nicola says, I'm iffy on polls, hence why I asked. Yeah, listen, the polling isn't... I want to just also add this addendum. I also don't think the polling, when you unskew the polls, to use some sort of that bullshit terminology, I don't think if you add likely voters, I don't think you're going to get, in the current polling even, you would get like Cynthia Head. I think you would get a closer race. And I think the people who would push Cynthia over the top depends on two things. These next few weeks with the debate and other things like that, and just what happens, you know, you never know what's going to happen with Cuomo and his corrupt aides and confidants. Because remember, we just had Trump get two people found guilty on charges. And guess what? This year, I don't know if you guys knew, two Cuomo aides and confidants were just found guilty on corruption charges. Prococo and Cagliari. So really, he really is the mirror image of Trump in so many ways. And the second reason, the second thing is turnout. It's going to be turnout as the deciding factor too for Cynthia. Kennedy says, wait, Trump gave money to Cuomo, 10-foot man says, not for this, not this time around, but yes, Trump has previously donated to Andrew Cuomo in previous campaigns, $64,000. And that's just Trump, not talking about all the people who are Trump financers who've also backed Cuomo in previous campaigns and some in this one even. There's a whole Republicans for Cuomo group to give you an idea of, you know, just the type of person Cuomo is. Theo says, I think the debate is going to make him look like an a-hole. Perhaps. James said I should jump on for the debate and just do wrestling commentary the whole show. Yeah, I'm thinking something like that. Maybe something Mystery Science Theater-esque. But we'll see how it goes. And the final comments of the day. Coming soon, Doomed Live from City Hall, says Renee. Nicola asks, what is your thoughts about the notion that if Hillary won, the left wouldn't be as galvanized as it is now? He continues, I think it's a true statement, but the cons are so massive. Listen, I wouldn't have preferred Trump over Hillary. So, yeah, in a perfect scenario, for me, Hillary would have won. But we'll make the best of it, and that's my view of it, and that's what we've been doing. I'll go more into that question. If you re-ask that question, please, on the next stream, I'll go more into it. Ask it earlier on after the guest. And everyone's making fun of me for getting a early digital version of the Chapo book. And I'll leave it there. Please make fun of me for Theo. We'll end with Theo. Yeah, of course you did, Mr. Hollywood. I know Cynthia Nixon. Yeah. I don't know her as well as you probably think. But yes, I've met her more than once. And worked with her more than once. All right, folks. That's it. Watch the Cynthia Nixon, Andrew Cuomo debate on Wednesday. Follow me on Twitter and I will let you know if I'm going to do something with that day or maybe the night after. And please, if you could become a Patreon, patreon.com/Matt Binder. I really just want to hit that halfway point to the goal so I could start doing some member stuff. I could start doing member stuff early, but I really positioned myself to stick to that goal, that halfway point of the goal, I should say. And also leave an iTunes review, please. I really appreciate those. I think they're really helpful, to be quite honest with you. And have a good night, everyone, and see you all next time on Doomed.